It's Monday night, and that means a brand new episode of Graphic Policy Radio is on the air. It's the show that mixes comics and politics, perfect for the folks who wonder when DC Comics Prez will finally get into the 2016 presidential race. I really want to know what a teenager thinks on social media about the presidential race and what you'd do for the country. Having earned... It's such an obscure one. In about a month or two, everyone will know this one. Maybe I was ahead of time for that. So having earned well over $1.2 billion so far, Marvel's Avengers Age of Ultron is a juggernaut of a film, but dollars doesn't mean that it's without controversy. Joining us to discuss the film tonight is Sarah Jaffe, but before I introduce her, I want to welcome my co-host Alana. How you doing? How's your Memorial Day so far?
Awesome, and I'm glad we're talking about Ultron. It's funny, I was worried we'd be the last podcast in the world to cover it, and yet it looks like a lot of folks haven't talked about it still, so hopefully you guys will be hearing this with some fresh ears.
Yeah, it's never too late, and the film's, like, really chugging along, so it's perfect timing still. So for those who don't know Sarah is a reporting fellow at the Nation Institute and a giant nerd who... once upon a time, wrote about comics more than she wrote about politics, believe it or not, and she has lots of feelings about superhero movies and their politics, which is why she is joining us tonight. Sarah, welcome, and thanks for joining us.
Hello, thank you for having me.
All right, so I feel like the best place to start is to get both of your opinions generally about Age of Ultron and what you thought of the film. We'll start with Sarah.
Oh, goodness. I just saw Mad Max this week, and I'm like, retroactively, like, angry again because it was so good, and Age of Ultron was so disappointing, and it wasn't even a bad movie. It was just kind of a mediocre movie.
I can see that.
I agree. Yeah, that's how I feel, too. I was, like, you know, leaving the movie theater, there were a few things that made me outright angry. There were a number of things that I really quite enjoyed. But now, looking back on it, however many weeks later, and having more recently seen Mad Max, I just keep thinking about how much I love Mad Max.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, you know, I can think of plenty of Marvel Comics movies that are, like, really epically bad. Like, the first Hulk movie that we've all forgotten about, or tried to forget about, with Eric Bana, was, like, one of the most atrocious things I've ever seen in my life. But at least that's sort of memorable, right? And when you think about, I just don't want these movies to be meh. And this one was so meh.
I was looking at some of my notes, and coming out of the film, my feedback had been, you know, this is not as good as the first Avengers movie, which I adored, not as good as Captain America 2, which I adored, not as good as Guardians, which I liked quite a lot. But I put this right underneath there, and yet I find myself feeling pretty dispassionate about it now, and I don't know if it's because I've just been stewing on the things that make me frustrated with it, which we should probably... dive into, since I feel like that's a big part of our lack of enthusiasm, and I've sort of forgotten the moments that made me really happy, but
I feel
like it's tougher to comparison to Mad Max.
Yeah, I think, but I also think I would have put it somewhere below the first and third Iron Man movies, too, which I also quite enjoyed.
Whoa!
Iron
Man
3. Yeah, I mean, Iron Man 2 is, like, the worst of the current crop, which... you know, again.
You think it was better than Iron Man 3, though?
Hmm? No, I think Iron Man 3 was better than it.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Definitely.
All right.
Like, a lot. I think Iron Man 3 was better than Iron Man 1, too, but that's we could have this argument for days.
Yes, we could.
So we maybe should not have this argument for days. But I'm just saying... But, yeah, I think it was very disjointed, and I couldn't really figure out what was going on in many cases other than, like, well, we have to do another Avengers movie. And it also, I mean, I think it probably suffered a little bit from being a sort of middle movie because they're trying to get to the Infinity Gauntlet, all of that, which is clearly coming. Civil Wars is clearly coming. Like, all of these things that people have a lot of feelings about are clearly on the way. And this one was like, well, we need to sort of establish some more stuff. And also, I guess we're not ever going to actually get a Black Widow movie, so they're going to stuff in a lot of kind of shitty character development about Black Widow that we could have probably done without because it wasn't very good.
Yeah, that feels very much the case to me. There was a whole marketing machine behind the film that required that certain things appear in it because they'd be appearing in the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show or because they'd be appearing in future Marvel movies. Plus, there's all this fan service that has to get done. And, you know, there are moments of fan service that are great. Like, I actually enjoyed, you know, having Cap call Sam Wilson and Sam Wilson say, hey, I'm still working on a missing persons case. Like, I enjoy that fan service because it checks in with me about something that I care about. But
right.
but fan service that's just sort of like marking off a box to say you did it, I don't really, that doesn't give you an emotional connection, so I don't really think it's that good.
Yeah.
But I share your frustration with, like, the Natasha characterization that was put into the movie. You know, I know this has been a topic that a lot of people have been debating since the movie came out. It's complicated because we love her so much. We only want the best things for her. And I think that because she's our only, like, female lead, you know, there's so much riding on everything that happens in her storyline, you know, that we wouldn't feel so intently about if there were other characters around who were female, you know?
I think, you know, my reaction to a lot of the things that a lot of people had very intense reactions to were much less that, like, this is horrifically offensive because feminism, and much more like, this is really ham-handed. Like, it was just badly done. And in no case were these things that I was, like, you know, completely morally opposed to from the beginning to the end. But if you're going to give me a love story, I would like to actually believe that this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to not feel like you dropped in an entire set of characters in this, like, Hawkeye family just so that we, all of the feelings that you spent the entire first Avengers movie evoking in us between Natasha and Clint are now like, oh, wait, no, he's married and it's fine. And there was never anything romantic there at all. And no, great, look over here. Which is what all that felt like to me. I don't know if I'm, you know, if you guys feel me on that one or not, but, and then.
Wait, so I guess I'm sorry, just so I'm clear, are you somebody who felt like the Clint and Natasha relationship should have been, like, in a romantic frame, or I'm not quite sure if I follow, like, what
I feel like that was
be.
The entire thing that they were leading us towards in the first movie. And if it wasn't, like, fine, okay, these things happen. Like, I, you know, there are all sorts of interesting relationships you can give characters that aren't romantic. But, like, this whole thing felt like, oh, no, never mind all this stuff that we did over here. We're just going to actually change that completely on you, and now we want you to look over here.
Yeah, I mean,
we want you to, you know.
I'm saying in the first film, I definitely got the vibe that there was something up with Natasha and Clint, either in the past or currently going.
Right.
Like, they're
right.
But then at the same time, there was a couple things where it was almost like brother-sister-ish. Of just, like, two agents who really, really well knew each other. So I was never quite positive on that. But I definitely thought that was the direction it was going. And I think that's where I think a lot of people thought it was going, other than, you know, then Natasha had this moment in Winter Soldier with Steve as they're going towards whatever base it was. And they had this back and forth. And you're like, okay, there's something going to go on between her and, you know, Captain America.
See, I never for a second read that movie that way.
Okay.
I was always like, they are definitely not hooking up. And I really, actually, that was the thing I really enjoyed about that movie, was that they're not. And that this is a buddy movie, right? That most of this film is a buddy arc. And, like, the love story in that movie is Cap and Bucky, which is a whole other thing. But, like,
Right. That's the romantic arc there, even if it's not even if it's bromantic, it's still like that's the romantic story. And she is his buddy who is like, get your head out of your ass and start dating again, because you really need to like get over the fact that, you know, your girl moved on with her life and you need to move on with your life, too. And that was great. And I I feel like, fine, you want to go in a different direction with this? You have to actually make me believe it. And you have to actually make me feel it. And to get back to the Mad Max comparison, the thing about Mad Max is it is 2 hours of, like, explosions and violence and whatever. And somewhere along the line, I found myself actually really caring about these characters, despite, like, almost no, like, sort of expositional scenes, right? There was nothing remotely the equivalent of, like, you know, half an hour at Hawkeye's farmhouse with, you know, them splitting wood and talking about baby having. There's nothing like that at all in Mad Max. And yet, like, I care about these characters, and I understand that this is, like, that there are relationships happening here and that things are changing, and I actually felt an emotional resonance in that movie that I didn't in The Avengers, despite, like, way more attempts to steer me into having those feelings.
So I'm one of those people who, when I watched the film and I heard Natasha saying, not just saying this is necessarily what was said, but when I heard Natasha say that the Hulk, that she was a monster, that she was the monster too because she couldn't have children, I turned to my husband and said, what the fuck did that just happen? And he looked at me and said, I'm sorry, what? Because I was the person who heard that. And heard him and heard what I just said. And he heard her say that she's an assassin who's killed people, and that's why she's a monster. And the world seems to be split between people who heard her say that she's a monster because she's a trained assassin who's killed a lot of people, and people who heard her say that she's a monster because she can't have kids. And I think that the filmmakers needed to make it so that we weren't wondering which way to take that line, because they are completely different things.
Yeah.
And the last thing I want from my hero, my sole, my one and only female hero in the movie, and there's cool female side characters, but there's only one female hero in the movie, is for her to say that biology is destiny and have a sad over, like, the fact that she can't biologically have kids with a man who she's just not even dating yet.
Well, okay, so there, like, my reaction to that is less, like, okay, there could be an interesting plot line there with her being, having been forcibly sterilized and having feelings about that. You've given me no reason to believe that this character would ever care about having babies. You've given me 2 seconds to believe that these characters have romantic feelings for each other, and already they're talking about babies. They haven't even kissed, y'all. Like,
yeah.
And I'm supposed to think that they're now plotting their, like, future reproduction. Also, I can't be the only one who remembers the second Hulk movie, because, yes, I've seen all the Hulk movies. I really would like a good Hulk movie somewhere along the line. Yeah.
I like the second one.
The second one's not bad. But, okay, so you remember the scene where Edward Norton as the Hulk and Liv Tyler as, I forget her name because I'm a terrible person.
Betty Ross.
Are making out on the bed, and he's got his heart rate monitor on it. His heart rate monitor is, like, going up and up and up and up and up, and oh, God, we can't have sex because I'll Hulk out. That was actually an interesting, oh, my God, how does this affect my ability to be intimate Hulk scene, right? In, like, in a way that actually made you go, like, oh, man, that does suck. Right, where you actually, I did anyway, at least, like, felt something about it. In this, it's like, I can't have babies, guys. And she's like, I can't have babies either. And I'm just like, really? That's all you got here? Like, there are so many more interesting things you could do with this than them both, like, being like, but babies.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
IMDb generally has quotes. I have no idea how accurate the quotes are. So this is the banter it has between the two that I thought was interesting. So this is Bruce Banner. I can't have this, any of this. There is no place on Earth. I can go where I'm not a monster. Pretty straightforward statement. Natasha's response, according to this, is, you know what my final test was in the Red Room? They sterilized me, said it was one less thing to worry about. You think you're the only loner on the team.
Instead of loner,
I think that's where she says monster.
Yeah.
Loner. Oh, my God. That's fucked up, too, but different. That's definitely different, but also fucked up.
Yeah, which I'm wondering.
Not being able to have kids does not make you a loner.
Well, so that's the
right.
thing.
Oh, my God.
I read what she says isn't necessarily about her not having being able to have kids, but her general, like, fucked up situation in the both the loner and the monster part of it. Is like, I was trained to kill people and done, like, I'm in that camp more so. And then the other interesting, in the word monster, okay, so I've decided, I was kind of doing the query just to look for the word monster in the quotes. It actually comes up a whole bunch in the film. So the Vision at one point says, maybe I am a monster. I don't think I'd know if I were one. And then another point, Steve Rogers says, this isn't about being beating Ultra. It's about proving we're not monsters. So clearly they attempted some odd theme with the word monster.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think the point that, again, that we're making here is, like, the fact that, like, we all sort of had very different reactions to this. Like, to some degree, that's movie making, that's art. Everybody's going to bring in their own reaction to it. But, like, it just wasn't very well done, again, right?
No.
Like, I just feel like so much of this stuff was just dropped in very heavy-handedly. And we're supposed to just sort of have emotional reactions to these things that are not well done. And, like, particularly, again, I have to go back to the first Avengers movie because, like, Scarlett Johansson is a lot of things. What she is as an actress is she's very, very good at portraying a lot without doing very much.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in that first movie, you have all of these scenes where all you've got is a close-up on her face, and that's what you have to read so much from that, and she's good enough to do it. So, like, the scene where she's in India or wherever she's going to find the Hulk the first time, and he, like, screams at her, and she jumps up with the gun, and it zooms in on her face, and you can see her, like, terrified, but also, like, dude, I'm going to fuck you up if you come any closer to me, right? And then the scene with Loki where she's, you know, doing the whole thing, and is she acting, is she not acting, and that whole, like, that's such a good scene between two just excellent actors. Also, this movie just suffered from not having Tom Hiddleston in it, because Tom Hiddleston makes everything better. Tom Hiddleston made the two Thor movies watchable. So, you know. But, like, there's so much of that, excuse me. My neighborhood is, like, going crazy with fireworks tonight. So I imagine they're probably illegal fireworks, but anyway.
I did not actually hear it, so don't worry too much.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
But anyway, yeah, I feel like there's so much here that was just, like, missed opportunities and so many ways that, like, okay, if what you really want to have is a love story between Natasha and Bruce Banner, then okay, you can do that. And you could have done that in a way that, like, your fans would have been there with you for it. Instead of like this, right, it's just like, bonk, no, here you go, now you have to have feelings about this. You've gotten no lead-in for it. Like, I feel like there was a whole movie that somebody has written a script for and is writing this, like, you know, like, when you're reading a Giant Comics crossover, right? And you're not reading all of it. And this felt like something was missing here, right? That I'm like, oh, am I supposed to believe this now? Because I don't. But maybe if I'd read the three other stinking comics in the Giant crossover, then maybe I'd understand it. Except I haven't seen them all because I'm a nerd.
That's a great comparison, Sarah. That's a really great comparison. I mean,
well,
yeah,
I think
that's a hell of a
way to
describe
it. I really am
often
the person who doesn't read the entire thing.
But I think that's a good way to get at the problem with the film. You know, I am someone who just didn't, I never would have seen Natasha and Bruce together as a couple in the comics, and I don't see them as a couple in the movie either.
Yeah.
And if they were going to try to sell me on that, they had to do a lot more work to carry it. But what also made it more uncomfortable is, like, sure, she is. She's, like, singing him a lullaby. I mean, I get that it's sort of like, oh, why is the female character the one who has to do the emotional work in the team when dealing with the Hulk? But Natasha
wages
is, like,
for Natasha's
one of her power sets. Yeah, absolutely, dude. But Natasha's powers, like, not powers, they're not her skills, is she's really fucking good at emotional manipulation. So it's fucked up that, like, this is left for the woman. But, like, among that team, she's who I trust to do it best anyway. That said, like, why would she be having a romantic thing with, like, why are they calling it a lullaby? It just creeps me out having that framed that way. Ick, ick, ick.
So the funniest on that, so the one is, it felt like, and the comics, they've dealt with the Hulk that way in two different ways. They had either Jessica Drew do it, whose power is to, like, manipulate people's emotions and put out,
men.
Like,
just
pheromones.
Men. Just
yeah,
men.
A men. Yeah, that's true. And put out, like, pheromones and calm people. So that makes sense in character-wise. Like,
right.
It totally makes sense. The thing that I actually was hoping for, like, and I started, I think, jumping up in my seat, and my wife was staring, kind of, like, looking at me, like, why are you so excited? In the comics, they had, you know, what a shock. They've been doing something with a kitten bomb. Like, the first couple issues of the Hulk with the whole Marvel redo, whatever, a year or two, was he went to go work for S.H.I.E.L.D., and S.H.I.E.L.D.'s like, well, how do we get you to calm down? So they, like, were testing all these different things, and it was, like, it was either a kitten bomb or a puppy bomb. I don't remember which it was, but they basically dropped
Amazing.
A box of puppies and kittens, and I'm, like, watching this movie and being like, puppy bomb, puppy bomb, puppy bomb, and then there's, like,
Aww.
Nothing, and I'm just like, this is such a letdown.
Puppy
that
Bomb
would
have made it so much better.
That
Puppy
would've
Bomb would have
awesome.
Made it so much better. Yeah, and so, okay, so, like, I'm not just angry at this movie about Natasha. I'm angry at this movie about Natasha, let's be real. But I'm also, like, the whole Clint family secret blah, blah, blah mm-hmm. thing just also felt shoehorned in. And again, like, I can't shake the feeling that it felt shoehorned in to get him out of the way so they could get Natasha and Bruce. It's like, here you go. And also, the whole movie felt like they were setting it up to kill him. And even, like, the line that happened when they killed, sorry, spoilers, guys, Quicksilver instead, right, is like, bet you didn't see that coming. I'm like, really? Like, don't joke with me how you're emotionally manipulating me, movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, the movie is supposed to be, like, that's the thing. It's supposed to make you think that Clint is the marked man, and then marked man, good God.
Right.
And then he lives, and Quicksilver dies. And I don't know, Quicksilver dying in that way, like, it just... It's hard for me as, like, a huge Quicksilver fan who was confused about his portrayal in the movie. Like, he wasn't, like, completely out of character, but it wasn't quite right either. But in some ways, what they got wrong about him were things that they were just by nature going to get wrong by it being a movie. There's a lot of feelings I have around that. But
I mean, I kind of feel like they had to kill him off just because they have to share the rights to him with the X-Men movies. So, you know. But, like... Right, I just, like, I don't enjoy the movie telling me that it's dicking around with my expectations. I don't actually find that cute. I find that obnoxious. Like, I just, the thing I keep saying about Mad Max, going to keep coming back to this, is that it didn't insult my intelligence. And I felt like the Avengers movie was talking down to me constantly, and, like, dude, I am a, you know, journalist with a master's degree who's working on a book who also is a emotionally invested fan in these characters, and I'm okay with being both of those things. Why do I feel like this movie is treating me like I'm stupid?
Yeah, that would be a huge problem.
To me, like, I think the biggest issue I had with the film was, and you kind of brought it up before, is it felt like it didn't stand on its own, and I've had issues with some of the Marvel comics or movies in the past with this, is that it felt like a whole bunch of different segments, and the segments point weren't about Age of Ultron, it was getting to Infinity War. And Civil, and more importantly, the next Captain America film, Civil War, was the other, like, lead up. And it was just like, all right, we're going to have this ensemble to then split everything off again and, like, have them go off and do their own thing, which was, like, the exact opposite of the original Avengers, where it was, we had all these individual movies and we brought it together here. This one was, like, we have them all together and we're putting out plot threads to lead them apart again.
And that just makes me think of the excellent comic that, God, was it at the Toast? Who did it? Or was it Matt Forrest? Somebody did a great, I think it was at the Toast, a great comic, like, art blog post about, you know, why are all the Avengers not there for each other when, like, the world's about to explode in all these other movies, right? And it was like, hey, Tony, they're going to kill the president, or no, the Tony, that was the one where they're going to kill the president, whatever, I can't quote the whole thing, it was pretty funny, because it is this, like, okay, the world's about to end. You've got this crazy terrorist trying to kill Tony Stark. Why exactly are the rest of the Avengers not there? Like, why is nobody showing up to help?
I remember that. There was
Once you've created this team, like, you have to come up with these weird things that are, like, not quite world-ending, but sort of world-ending in order for these movies to feel, you know, to feel
okay to exist,
thrilling and exciting and intense, but also, like, right, like, why is this only two Avengers in this movie and the other ones are off doing whatever it is that they're doing with their time?
But, like, a perfect example is the scene with Thor when he goes to, like, the water, the, like, the whole thing, which supposedly, I guess, there was more to it, but they cut it out or whatever, where even Chris Hemsworth was, his quote was, like, I have no fucking idea what was going on in that scene. And it's clearly...
Well, he was having a vision, guys.
Yeah,
vision.
It was... The vision was to show the Infinity Gems. Yeah, it was to show the Infinity Gems and then also lead to Ragnarok, which we know is the next Thor film, which also...
And also
to
have no shirt on. That actually part of the agenda of, like, the film, was that we need to have Thor not have his shirt on.
Let's be real. If the agenda of the film is going to include Chris Hemsworth and Chris Evans and Jeremy Renner with no shirt on, I am okay with that.
Yeah,
I will sign on for that movie. In fact, I was complaining about the trailer not having enough of Jeremy Renner's arms.
It is all done on purpose. Having talked to someone who is in the know on that, they said they purposely have scenes with Chris Hemsworth shirtless and Chris Evans shirtless to bring in the women. It is a planned
thing. One should do this. And the gays.
Yeah, women appreciate it. And conversely, one of the things I give the movie serious props for is at no point did I feel like it objectified Natasha. Like, as much as there was so much shit about how the movie treated Natasha that made me incredibly angry, when you look at how it's filmed and how other characters look at her, at no point is she regarded as, like, oh, look at her ass. Like, that's never the case. Even when Bruce falls on top of her and his head lands in her boobs, it still wasn't played for, like, objectifying her. It was just slapstick. Like, that's pretty impressive. And I want to give credit where credit's due on that. So, so good on that. What did you guys think of Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch and their introduction and their portrayals and how they were acted and blah, blah, blah?
The accents were horrible.
I feel like
that was my sense.
The accents were definitely horrible. I mean, I feel like the internet joke has been, like, the Scarlet Witch / Dark Willow, right? That, like, it's just...
Oh, God.
Like, she's such a, like, Joss Whedon stock character. And that takes out anything interesting about the character that people who are fans of the comics might have brought to this. Which, like, fine, okay, the movie should stand on their own. I haven't read a lot of these comics either. But, yeah, I was just like, oh, here's River Tam. Oh, here's Dark Willow. Like, right, like, here's this like, weirdo, right? Like, where was the like, you know, he's fast and she's weird? It's like, oh, that's what's going to happen here, right? This is what's going to happen here. And, yeah, I just don't have any feelings about it, which is something that mostly was not done very well again.
It, to me, was odd. Like, they just kind of, like, went and met up with Ultron. Like, it was just very a weird setup with that. And out of the two Quicksilvers, I much prefer the Days of Future Past version. I actually love that version.
That was fun.
Yeah. And he's what the character should be. If the character's like 20 or 19, he's going to be a smartass, and he's not going to be able to sit still, and he's just going to kind of do what he wants to do and take advantage of it, which makes complete sense. And I don't know. So my biggest issue with Scarlet Witch, the funny part, is Elizabeth Olsen was on Daily Show, like, the day before we went to see it, and she was describing her, like, stupid hand gestures. She's like, it's in the movie, and I'm just making hand gestures and feeling like an idiot. And that was kind of on my mind the entire time watching the film, of just watching her do these, like...
dancing.
Yeah, it was...
She was goth dancing. As somebody who spent a large portion of my late teens and early 20s in goth clubs, those gestures looked all too familiar.
Give her glow sticks and some
No glow sticks. Just
no glow sticks.
Just some fishnets and some Bauhaus.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
It was
and scene. Goth clubs. Goth dancing.
She was doing goth dance. what do you feel like the handling of the good robot, bad robot, like AI, you know, determinism, what counts as life? Like, I don't know. There's so much stuff in there, and the movie was so loose and everywhere on a lot of these questions. I mean, how do you feel like the movie handled artificial intelligence and those questions?
The saddest part of the movie for me was, like, early on when Ultron kills Jarvis. And I was just like, oh, Jarvis. So if that tells you something about this movie. I don't have any feelings about the Vision other than, like, Paul Bettany in very weird makeup.
I
thought it was adorable how they had him be like, oh, that's what a cape is? I'd like a cape too. That was adorable. And I think he was very well acted, and it was interesting to me to see the audience, like, you know, all the whole world, like all these people probably never cared who the Vision was or knew who he was, and people were really excited to see him. That's just kind of an interesting phenomenon. But I feel like when it comes to whether or not a movie treats the questions around AI, like, seriously, and really, I don't know, bring something to a conversation around it, this movie did not, like, actually add anything to the
discourse. No, it didn't at all. It didn't at all. It was just, right, it was more, like, anxieties around technology and not really anything. And also, like, I feel like the trailer for this movie was so good, and Ultron looked so scary. And then you get to the movie and he's making sort of bad jokes and you're just like, I don't know what's going on here. At the end of it, I was just like, I am not really, you know, like it, at the end, it was just another villain that has just a whole bunch of mindless minions that are coming at you, and you just have to, like, kill a lot of minions, and the minions weren't as cool looking as the last minions because they weren't, like, on flying, you know,
surfboards,
snowmobiles,
which was like the first film, right? The first film did the exact same formula.
There's a bunch of minions, right?
Yeah. So I think my thing was separating Spader from Ultron. Like, Spader was fantastic in what he was given. Line delivery, all that was great, and I will watch Spader, like, chew scenery all day long. He does it every single week in Blacklist. But the character itself was written so weird, making jokes, and, you know, he shouldn't be able to quite get jokes right away. Like, he's still learning all this stuff. But my thing is, I thought it was a missed opportunity. Like, if the film, I think, would have been so much better and borderline genius if it was all about Tony Stark and his ego and his id, and that's what Ultron is, and examine that the entire film. And forget all the other goofy stuff. Like, just focus on that for this film. Like, as much as it is an ensemble film, still just make it really focused on him and let everything else kind of fall around it.
Yeah, well, it just felt like the same problems as actually the third X-Men movie, right? Where you've got, like, two major plot lines that they want to have going on at the same time. And so what you just end up is a weird, disjointed movie that doesn't do any of them very well. I feel like we're talking ourselves into liking this movie even less than we might have already done.
Well, let's talk about... I really love Jim Rhodes. Jim Rhodes was adorable and charming, and I want to give him big hugs.
And laugh
at all his jokes and parties.
Don Cheadle.
No.
He's great. He's great. I just...
It needed more.
I didn't hate the movie when I saw it, but when it comes time to talking about it, I can't think of anything good to say about it, really. Which is, you know, it wasn't miserable. I was just like, why? Oh, you know, at the end of the day, it was not that great.
That too. I mean, I really enjoyed the party scene, I have to say. Like, that, for me, that was just one of the things I enjoyed most. The people debating the question of who gets to lift the hammer and how, that was such a it was such a neatly set up way to determine to the audience that Vision is a good guy. It was like, oh, my God, mm-hmm. he lifts the hammer.
Yeah.
I thought that was
And it was funny because I think, and I think I had said just in a conversation probably with Peter, like, something before about, like, Steve Rogers would be able to lift the hammer. I bet he would. And so the fact that he was the one who came the closest to it was like, oh, yes, totally. I totally see that. Because who doesn't love Steve Rogers? At least movie version Steve Rogers. I mean, come on.
Oh, God. I love Steve Rogers in so many versions of Steve Rogers, especially movie version, but also in some other versions. One other thing also I will say about the movie that I liked quite. So I really hate when people write Thor as dumb. Now, Thor is not the smartest guy in the room, and the other guys in the room are like the people on the Avengers. But Thor
Bruce
is not
Banner and Tony Stark, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, he's not dumb. And I like that the movie does not write dumb Thor. I found a lot of the recent Avenger cartoon that was on TV to be unwatchable because it had dumb Thor. And dumb Thor is just irritating and not necessary. Like, the choices of character aren't either you are the smartest man in the world or you are dumb. You know what I mean? So I appreciate the film respecting Thor's intelligence. I like the sense of humor that Thor has in the films. It feels really apt to me. Generally speaking, I feel like the movies... I have not seen Thor 2, actually, so maybe I'll change my mind. But generally speaking,
it's
I feel like the movies have done
Thor
a good
1.
Job with them. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. The first, come on, the first Thor movie is totally mediocre.
I mean,
I've also basically never... been enthusiastic about Thor as a character. Pretty much not ever. Thor spin-off things are wonderful. We can talk about the, you know, Young Loki, Journey into Mystery, and thank you, Alana. I just read the Sith Journey into Mystery, which was excellent. Like, Alana lent me a giant stack of comics recently, so that's why I'm reading that. Thor has never done anything for me. Sort of like Superman has never done anything for me. I'm like, okay.
But what do you think about Thor in the movie, though?
I mean, he's Thor. he's not bad, but I would not have bothered to watch the second Thor movie if it did not also feature Tom Hiddleston as Loki, which is the most genius, wonderful casting decision that anybody's ever made in a comic book movie. Tom Hiddleston Loki is the greatest. In fact, I'm sure that if this Avengers movie had somehow managed to feature Tom Hiddleston Loki, I would have liked it a lot better.
Yeah, that's going to be
if
true.
He was somehow responsible for Ultron, that would be great. Also, isn't
it might
actually
be. I mean, it's
Hank
for
Pym responsible
right?
for Ultron?
Yes. Yep.
So, we're getting an Ant-Man movie.
Yep.
We got Ultron. Why did they not just tie those in? Because I can't be the only one who's like, why are you making an Ant-Man movie?
Yeah, the Ant-Man trailers actually are making it look good, but the Ant-Man trailers make it look like the movie has plenty of room to have Wasp, and boy, it really better have Wasp.
I'm a little confused by all of this. I find myself struggling to come up with something to compliment about this movie, other than, yes, it did feature Jeremy Renner's arms.
Oh, here's a question. So I want to talk about Wakanda. I want to talk about the fight that happened in Wakanda. And there's some things that I think are cool. Like, it's nice to see a modern, like, not, you know, some hellhole, like, modern African city with, like, people doing normal things, being normal people. Like, that's really great.
Right. Yeah.
Wakanda, however, is actually better than normal modern African city. Now, Wakanda is like sci-fi utopia.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to do this scene in Wakanda, I'm like, oh, that's great. They're having like African people just doing normal things. That's good. But why don't they have it just actually be like, you know, in a city in Africa, and it's like a real city in Africa, and people are just doing normal stuff? That would be pretty radical. Having it be in Wakanda... Like, that's not Wakanda. Wakanda is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, they're clearly, again, sort of teasing that they're doing a Black Panther movie, right? So we're going to get that. Right,
yeah,
they are.
It doesn't look like the Wakanda, like, that's not a science fiction paradise. And I want my science fiction paradise in Africa, you know?
Well, this is actually a good question on that, and I kind of thought about it, was we've seen the capital city of Wakanda, which is the science fiction paradise. And they've hint that the entire, like, country is, like, is very advanced and you know, scientifically ahead of, like, pretty much everywhere. But, I can't think of a comic where we've seen anything outside of the capital city other than, like, countryside. Like, can either of you, like, think of a Black Panther comic where you see not the capital of Wakanda?
No.
So and that was my
not my reading area.
That's just a normal city. Like, okay, I don't know. I was just really mixed feelings about it because I was happy to see a normal Africa, and then I was like, yeah, but Wakanda's better than normal.
I'm gonna go with they blew their budget on the Hulk and Hulkbuster fight, so they couldn't afford to make a real Wakanda, so they settled for probably South Africa.
But I was very excited when they're like, oh my god, it's Ulysses Claw. I like turned and said, like, oh my god, it's Ulysses Claw. And of course, Frank's like, what? I'm like, I'll tell you later. that was a good Easter egg for like people who are like way too into Black Panther. But it's not really possible to
apparently
be too into Black Panther, so.
And that whole scene to me felt like that was like, we are going to Wakanda and we're going to mention it for a second time because it was mentioned in, I want to say, the first Iron Man at one point. And the whole point was because we've got a Black Panther film in, I think, three years. We have to start setting that up, and that Black Panther will be in Civil War, so we have to set it up.
Will he? Is that what's going on?
Supposedly, what I have read, it seems like everyone, you might as well call Civil War Avengers 3 at this point from the cast that's going to be in it.
I am interested to see if that will be better than this. I mean, I'm hoping, because I'll go see it anyway, because, I mean, let's be real. I'm obviously going to go see it. I will probably watch Chris Evans read the phone book. So, and especially if he's reading the phone book in a Captain America outfit.
Yes. But what do you guys think of awesome female scientist whose name escapes me? And that's kind of a bad thing, but she's pretty awesome. Who invents the cradle that they use?
As soon as you
flesh.
Say that to me, I forgot it too. And there was a wonderful piece, Nicole at the Toast wrote a lovely piece about like having a Korean woman character who does something awesome, who is not a bunch of bad stereotypes. I wanted to see more of that. I was. But again, there's just so much happening in this movie that, like, none of it was terribly fulfilling. And then, like, I'm like, why am I watching people chop wood in, like, Hawkeye's little, like, retreat paradise space for so long when there's so much...
A wood. Because we got to see Chris Evans rip a log in half with his bare hands, nonchalantly.
He was wearing a shirt, though. I'm disappointed. If he's going to rip things in half with his bare hands, he should be not wearing a shirt.
I have to tell you, Sarah, I'm surprised to hear that. In my mind, he wasn't, but I'm sure you're right. But thinking
I'm
back,
pretty sure
on
he's
it,
wearing
I
a shirt.
He
pretty
well,
sure he's wearing
something.
A shirt. it's okay. We'll just keep objectifying Chris Evans. It's all right. I like
actress,
him for his mind too.
Dr. Helen Cho is
is
awesome lady scientist.
Yeah,
like
and again,
it gets shot, and it's just like fighting, and it's, she gets shot, and she's like, "Take care of like saving the world," and like she's just great. She's just great. She should be like definitely be like supporting cast, returning character who's
She was just underused. Like everything good was underused.
Well, she has interesting history, and it's a wonder. I'm wondering like where they're going to go with her. They've got to continue her use. And that she's the mother of Amadeus Cho, who's the seventh smartest man in the Marvel Universe, and is also a big fan, a big friend of Hercules, and deals with Hulk at one point, and, you know, kind of in that universe. So you wonder if she is the replacement of Amadeus, and Amadeus won't show up, or it's just was just a, you know, teaser and, you know, Easter egg for comic geeks.
I don't know. I would like some of these characters to not feel like just an Easter egg.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, we've got one lady hero, and we've got, like, one Dark Willow, River Tam, something woman. So, you know, I mean, I still don't think the movie passed the Bechdel test, but whatever. I don't know. I keep going back to this. Like, I feel like everything in that movie was really heavy-handed and, like, it didn't need to be. And this was not a problem, certainly, with the first Avengers movie. It really hasn't been a problem with most of these Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, where they really have done a fairly good job of, like, trusting the viewers to be there for the material and to not have to sort of overdo selling you on either sort of superpowers or these characters or anything. And yeah, that just felt disappointing that it was so overdone.
Well, Mike, when it comes to the powers, my thing, the only one that really bothered me out of anything was the Vision, who they bring up, and Vision has, like, really interesting powers with being able to control, like, density and all this other stuff, and he just kind of gets out there and he's flying and he's kind of doing the whole being able to walk through walls and stuff like that, but they don't at any point really explain it, and it just kind of is.
Yeah. Well, you know, it just came out of Thor having a vision in the water.
True.
Without a shirt on. Very important that he didn't have a shirt on. That created all the powers, was Thor's nipples.
That's where my powers come from.
Thor's nipples?
Yes. It's canonical.
Oh, goodness.
Do we want to at all hit on, like, I mean, there's so much has been said, so people might feel like it's all been said, but, like, the whole, like, why are there no Black Widow toys, and, in fact, why is Black Widow's action sequence being recast as Captain America in the children's toys thing? Because that, I feel like a huge amount of the press that came out of the movies has been around not having toys with Black Widow and, like, how girls have been written out of the marketing.
So,
you know,
okay.
I remember, yeah, oh, sorry. I remember when Disney bought Marvel, and our reaction to this, and I wrote a piece about this at the time because I was still writing at Newsarama, was, oh, well, maybe Disney has, you know, spent a long time sort of working on products for girls, and maybe this will mean that Marvel will spend a little bit more time developing products and you know, art aimed at girls. And instead, what it seems like is that Disney just sees Marvel as buying products for boys, and that, like, that girls should just be reading their, you know, princess books and watching the princess movies, and, like, why would girls care about superheroes at all?
So when Disney bought Marvel, I actually was on the stockholder call. I don't remember how the hell I got on the stockholder call, but somehow I got on the stockholder call.
Superpowers.
Yeah. And, I mean, they outright said that they bought Star Wars and Marvel for the boy segment. That their quote roughly was, we already dominate the girl segment. We are building the boy segment. That is why we spent whatever $2 billion on these two franchises. And, like, it was just outright thrown out there. My question, and I don't think anyone has really asked, and I've been tempted to ask them, is the lack of Black Widow toys, is that Marvel and Disney, or is it Hasbro who has the license? I don't know. I honestly don't know who makes that decision.
Yeah, I don't know who makes the decision, but in any case, it's just, like, and, my friend Janelle Aslan says this all the time, right, that, like, it's just such a colossally stupid decision to just, like, write out any audience you might have that is women, like, and to just, once again, to just, like, insult people with this, like, oh, we're just going to, like, recast this whole scene as toys and, like, whatever. They're toys to make more money for a company that's already made a ton of money making a, you know, movie that isn't very good, and Yeah, on some level it feels kind of silly to be like, I demand you make more products for me. But like, yeah, it just, at so many levels, these decisions made by comics companies, made by marketing firms, made by toy manufacturers, all just feel like they're, you know, it's just like, well, screw you. You don't exist. Not even you don't matter, but like you don't, you're not there. We are.
Thing that to me that's really weird is that Hasbro's toys for the non-movie stuff, so like forget, you know, Winter Soldier, Age of Ultron, all that, their other toy lines, like their Marvel Legends toy lines and Marvel, I think it's called Infinite Series is the other one, actually has a lot of female characters, including Black Widow figures. So yeah. My big thing isn't the exclusion necessarily for the movies. It's just, why is it included here and not the movies? Because you already have the figures. So
right.
It's just like, how are you not just slapping out on a different backer board and throwing it out there? Like, I was just looking at their Legend series right now of like Wave 2 and 3 that they announced at Toy Fair, and half the figures are women.
Yeah.
Well, right. Those are the more high-end toys. Right, those are for adults. And they don't get the kids.
Well,
not necessarily. Yes and no. Legends, I'd say, are probably more collectors, but not, I mean, somewhat. I mean, yeah, I could see that. It's just, it's weird. It's
and they think little boys hate girls, which is, little boys don't hate girls unless you tell them
to. They encourage little boys to hate girls by doing stuff like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
I was really happy to see
all very separate and where, you know, it's just, it's so frustrating to me because it's just like, again, it wouldn't be hard to do. It is, at this point, you have to do more work to not do it than to do it. You have to edit things that already exist. You have to, like, redo an entire thing. You could, like you said, just slap, you know, together a new version of the same figurine that you've already got. You've already got the mold somewhere, unless you've switched factories in China and they're, you know, tossed them already. But, yeah, it just, at some point, is like, you are not only ignoring us, you're not only whatever, you just like actively want us to not be here. And that's just what feels gross. And
it was great that Mark Ruffalo spoke out about that.
I mean, he's
awesome in every way. he's gotten the best politics. But that, of course, was like, and for him to be critical on that was really cool.
Yeah, well, it's just, right, it's just a frustrating, yet another frustrating thing, right? And, yeah, I just, to go back to Mad Max, because we're going to keep going back to Mad Max, aren't we? Like, this is a franchise that is all about the dudes, and was all about the dudes however many years ago. When was the first one? 1979? It's older than me, right, this franchise. And you can, it turns out, make a whole movie with a whole bunch of women in it. And, I mean, some MRAs will, like, have a sad, which is part of the fun for most of us. But, right, like, it's not actually that hard, right? It's not actually, like, a terrifyingly frightening thing to do to just make your action star a woman. It's really not that hard. It's just not.
So speaking of
Mad Max.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mad Max, the thing that I find fascinating with Mad Max is the progression of the film. So the first one's clearly about Mad Max. And then the second one, you have this community, and the women are much more important in it. In the first film, the women are really just victims of the violence and to move the story along. So the second one, they're leaders of their community. And then the third one, you've got just in charge of the whole town with Tina Turner's character. And then this next one, you have this progression of these women literally being the saviors of this community, where it's been this almost like progression of women will save the world throughout the four films.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Mad Max overthrow the patriarchy, you know?
Yes. Which is one thing I want to make sure we hit on before the end. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. You're saying more things. Go ahead. One thing I wanted us to hit on before the end is we need to talk about who are we fan casting Tom Hardy as in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Tom Hardy should be in all the things. Question. Although, right now I really want to just remake every Mel Gibson movie ever with Charlize Theron as the lead. including Braveheart, yes. but, oh yeah, we can fan cast Tom Hardy. Because, I mean, right, you know, Bane was just such a disappointment on so many levels.
Yeah.
But we all love Tom Hardy.
Not, yeah. Bane didn't happen. Bane is not a white guy. That just never happened. That never happened. So that means he can start fresh. Tom Hardy can start brand new and fresh in the Marvel Universe. But
yeah.
I know, Brett, you had a thought about who you wanted him to see as.
Well, I mean, I go with a good chunk of what seems the talk that I've seen out there is him casting him as Punisher and Frank Castle. Which I think he could probably do a hell of a job. Whether or not the movie and the character's done right is a whole other thing, but he himself would kick ass in that role.
Yeah. I mean, a sensitive Frank Castle.
Yeah, he's actually like tortured vet with PTSD. Like, he would kill that role.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm just, you know, I'm hoping that somebody does an updated Frank Castle and deals with Iraq or Afghanistan,
yep.
Because there's so much material there. And yeah, but I mean, that's a good one. That's a good one. I have to think about this. I've been thinking about this, but I'm still. I don't know. Alana, who do you think?
Wow. Yeah. I hadn't really drawn a set conclusion on this myself. I was just really stuck on the debating whether or not I wanted to even see anything that would happen with Punisher, because I have so many feelings about Punisher. You know, I think he's a really good actor. So there's all different kinds of characters he could tackle quite well. I do feel like he's got a particular angle on brooding. I think that, you know, a character that would allow him to truly manifest his excellence in the area of brooding while also looking handsome. And maybe for
he can also be very funny, right? You know,
That's true.
Can also be very, very funny and very light. And, like, you know, I think of Tom Hardy in Inception.
Means War. Yeah, but also this
Means
War.
Right? He's very funny.
Yep.
Okay, so then
and
do you think he'd be good for Gambit? I mean, it's too late.
No.
Didn't they cast somebody as Gambit already?
Well, I mean,
there
was
Tatum.
A Gambit in that first Wolverine movie. Oh, wait, Channing Tatum?
Yeah.
That's also terrible.
Who is
and
that?
And I like
he
Channing
a
Tatum
fan.
A lot,
he's
too, but that's not... I mean, sure, he's a comics fan. I believe that. I like him as an actor. I think he's a really good actor, actually. But, like... I mean, Gambit is pretty, but I don't see him
bad.
As Beefcake. I don't know. Because... Yeah. I mean, now that, whatchamacallit, Magic Mike. I'm going to get really confused here with Mad Max and Magic Mike going on.
right.
Yeah, Channing Tatum is like, really beefy and, like, yeah, is, like...
Gambit doesn't have to be, but I feel like he would still
I don't think he is.
But Gambit isn't a character who definitely can't be. Like, there's characters who can't be. I don't think he, like, it's like a no. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like we've got enough Beefcake in all of these movies, right? Like, I mean, far be it from me to say we've got too much Beefcake. But, you know, I feel like I like some multidimensional masculinity in these movies, okay? This is why I like Hawkeye, and this is why I was disappointed with the Hawkeye scenes. Because, again... Right?
Okay. Well,
oh,
any other theories on who we should cast him as then? So we have Punisher as a possibility.
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
One that I actually thought might be a little weird, he'd probably actually have to lose a little bit of bulk, would be Norman Osborn.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's a little...
He can do intense.
He definitely do intense. And he can also do very, like, charming and... Like, he would be an interesting pick for him. I don't know how he would look with his hair slicked back, but...
The hair just... You just wouldn't... I mean... Anyway, that hair is a period piece, and it doesn't need to, like, exist outside the period in which it made sense.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Supposedly he was in the running for Apocalypse at one point.
That's something.
I guess we like his voice work.
Yeah, or even Doctor Strange, I think he was mentioned for as well, which would have been interesting.
What?
Yeah,
yeah, I don't
I actually
really
like
Robert Batchin
as Doctor Strange. What about him taking over for Wolverine? When Jackman leaves.
Yeah, he is. I mean, also,
yeah.
Oh. You know, he could carry that.
I really want them to go find Glenn Danzig and make Glenn Danzig play Wolverine. Because Wolverine is supposed to be
Glenn
short,
Glenn Danzig wants
y'all,
them to find
really
him, too.
I'm really annoyed
that
Wolverine has not been short.
Glenn Danzig
feel
is
bitter that Wolverine
has
not been
be.
Short. On behalf of all short people.
Yeah.
Wolverine was one of us, damn it.
That's a good question. How tall is Tom Hardy? Hold on.
Much too tall.
He's not.
Hollywood has not treated Wolverine as a short individual. It's just, because God forbid,
Very upsetting to me. Ugh, it's too late at night, you guys. I'm blanking on Marvel Comics characters. I'm going to wake up in the morning and be like, that's who it is. And email you both and be like, why did I not think of this?
Oh, God. You know, it's not Marvel, but you know who he'd be great as in DC? He should be Catman in the Secret Six movie that will never ever get made.
He was originally in the Secret, or not in the Secret Six. He was supposed to be in the Suicide Squad film.
Who?
Oh.
As
who was
Hardy,
he was
supposed to be a Rick Flag, I think.
Huh.
I did not know that. I don't know.
That's
just
okay,
Tom
but
Hardy
I'm,
at all
I'm
the
behind
movies.
This now. Tom Hardy should be Catman. I think I'm gonna go on that.
Okay.
Should be Catman.
Tom Hardy in all the movies.
Yes, that too. Okay. Well, I'm glad we were able to come to a point of progress and consensus around this.
We're here for. I am. Yes, we have up twinkles on that. No, I think I'm going back to some variety of the masculinity thing, right? Like, I mean, I guess Bruce Banner sort of provides that in the Avengers movies, right? Because he's not, like, when he's not the Hulk, but then he's, right, then he's the Hulk. So we still have that. And here's something positive to say about the Avengers movie. The most interesting parts of that movie were not weird Hawkeye baby having whatever business, but like him actually like having some feelings about being the non-superpowered guy on this squad, right? Like we've all established that Natasha is better at life than all of them, but yeah, there's something interesting about him being matched, standing around next to all of these sort of giant, larger than life bodies that we all want to see shirtless. And going, I have a bow and arrow, right? Like that, like, I have a bow and arrow. It's like, wow, okay. And I find that much more interesting than, like, we're going to drop in a wife and three children for you now. And we're all supposed to care about that. No, but I care about him when he's like, I'm going to die. That is going to happen right now. And then he doesn't because they couldn't actually kill him off, so they're going to kill off somebody else to try to... Ugh, anyway. Every time I think about this movie and think about something I like about it, I just get angry again.
Yeah, but the family gave me an excuse to see Linda Cardellini, and I'm very happy about that because I'll admit I have a massive crush on her.
I mean, she's lovely. I want to actually buy any of this stuff when it's happening in a movie. It just felt like a weird retcon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's never been the case for the character, but it also doesn't really matter to the movies that it's never been the case. But it's definitely something which is not really indicated with in any kind of earlier character construction within the films themselves.
Well, right. Exactly. It just felt like a surprise, you know? Like, he's on the bed getting surgery or whatever when he'd been shot, and like he's like, oh, I don't have a girlfriend, and then like, you know, I just, again, I don't like when the movie is like patting itself on the back for being more clever than its viewers. And I felt like way too much of that here, in a way that, yeah, it just turns me off. I don't need Joss Whedon to remind me that he's smarter than me or something. Like, I'm not impressed.
Do you guys have any final thoughts you want to impart?
Go see Mad Max.
Yep. I was about to say the exact same thing. yeah, I think that's my big thing is, I think Mad Max has shown us that you can do strong female, or, you know, strong in the good and bad way of all that, female characters, or do fantastic female characters, plus have kick-ass action, and like, it's the way it should be, and not really piss people off and have weird moments. Then again, the movie did have like 500 words, if that, in the entire film.
It's okay. They were all entirely necessary. They also had Elvis's granddaughter in it. Lenny Kravitz's daughter and Elvis's granddaughter. I mean, come on.
Wait, really? Elvis's granddaughter was in it?
Yep.
Yeah, the red-haired girl, whose name I have forgotten, is
Capable. Yeah.
Yep.
Really?
Elvis's granddaughter. Yep. Riley Keough, Lisa Marie's kid.
I did not know that. I was more...
Hell yeah.
I was kind of geeking on the fact that Morton Joe was Toe Cutter from the first film.
Yeah. And it's so there in the eyes.
Yeah.
In the eyes. I mean, Jesus.
Well, now you know Elvis's granddaughter.
I picked up on Zoe Kravitz, but I did not know that.
Well, we all know Zoe Kravitz, but...
Okay, now that I see a picture of her, she totally looks like her daughter, Priscilla
Presley. Right? She looks like
and
Elvis.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Yeah, so go see Mad Max. It will not annoy you.
Well,
it's awesome.
You will enjoy seeing things
next,
blow up.
Yeah.
Well, I'll actually see the other thing about Mad Max. The fact is that it's all practical effects. Is the other thing I think was amazing comparing the two films.
Yeah.
There's very little CGI.
Yeah. Yeah, it made me want to talk about, like, acting techniques and, right, like, framing shots and how you do special effects. Like, it made me want to go to film school. So, which I thought about doing once upon a time in my life, and I certainly didn't. But it was that kind of movie that I was technically really impressed with, as well as anything. And, like, I want to, like, spend, you know, hours talking about, like, Charlize Theron's acting and how she uses her body and all of that. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sarah. I, like, have been wanting you to come on the show forever.
I would love
to have you back any old time.
I have to read more comics, then.
I have to keep loaning you my stuff, but it's all good.
I know. We can talk about the Wicked and Divine at some point, because I have a lot of feelings about that.
Yeah. We had Kieran on, near the beginning of the series, and I would love to have him on again. He said he would, but it's, you know, hard to schedule. But it'd be interesting to have, like, a more of a deep dive conversation with somebody who isn't, like, also just the artist, the writer. I mean, so
somebody who isn't Gillen. Yes. Wow.
But he needs to get his ass back on the show, too, because that was really incredible.
You should make him come on and talk about Phonogram, because that's coming up, too.
That's true. I'll shoot him an email. I've been waiting for a Phonogram Volume 3 for quite some time, and it looks like it's going to be really outstanding and worth the wait.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm going with the wall, so it says we've kind of hit that wall and said everything that we need to say on this.
Yeah.
In general, I think we're all kind of blah on Age of Ultron. And go see Mad Max. It seems to be the universal.
Go see Mad Max.
Opinion. When it comes to Age of Ultron, our opinions are go see Mad Max.
Co-signed.
Well, you know, before we wrap up, we always give our guests a chance if they want to plug things they're working on or where people can follow them, feel free if you'd like to.
I'm working on a book that has nothing to do with any of this, and you can follow me on Twitter at Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, L-J-A, F as in Frank, F as in Frank, E.
Cool. Appreciate you having on. It was a great discussion, and I hope to have you on again. We'll definitely do Wicked and Divine at some point.
All right.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So Sarah, thank you so much. It was great having her. Are we settled on next week's show or no?
Yes, next week is going to be Mad Max.
Okay,
it's
cool.
Be for being stuffed up.
Yeah, that's cool. I could hear you towards the end. You're getting a little stuffy. So yeah. So speaking of Mad Max, next week we're going to be discussing the film. So we will hopefully be talking cinematography and all that fun stuff. And getting even more into my crazy theories of the progression of George Miller's world. Thanks, everyone, for listening in. I appreciate it. Of course, you can catch us every single day at graphicpolicy.com. Of course, we're also on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all at Graphic Policy. We keep it nice and consistent. So until next time, I'm Brett.
And I'm Ilana.
And you can keep it geeky.